Radiotopia.
You didn't hear this from me, but Normal Gossip is back for a sixth season. Join host Kelsey McKinney as she shares the juiciest gossip from the real world. Each episode, she's joined by a special guest, and you might recognize a couple this season from the Radiotopia universe. Normal Gossip, named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture, is out now on all your favorite podcast platforms. New episodes starting April 17th.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
Dear Diary. Hello. This is the first page of this journal, so I'm a little nervous. I don't know about you, but I'm freaking out. I want someone to ask me to homecoming. Please, God, let someone I like ask me to homecoming. Someone I can brag about. I'm burning a confidence candle for me to be able to be myself and not be shy.
If you're like Ruby Wendell, then you know homecoming is not all about school spirit. Sure, there's a pep rally, a football game, sometimes there's even a parade. But for most teenagers, all of that pales in comparison to the big homecoming dance. From PRX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil. This week, we continue our back-to-school series with our second school dance-themed episode. This time, the tale of a teenager who, like many of us, had no rhythm and even less game.
Dancing was so far from my mind as being the point of a dance. The point of a dance was to find a date and affirm your possibility of finding a date by having a date. And then whatever happens at the dance, okay, cross that bridge when you come to it.
Before he could even think about crossing that bridge, Adam Rubin had to bypass a few more immediate roadblocks. One, he'd never asked a girl out. And two, the only other school dance he'd been to didn't exactly transform him into a...
I always avoided school dances because they were scary places. And then I finally decided that I was just going to be brave and go to the eighth grade semi-formal. I put on a suit. It's the suit I wore to my bar mitzvah with, I think, a tie with fish on it because my bar mitzvah was fish themed. I think I realized 5 minutes after being dropped off at the dance that that was not the right choice. And what happened was I was just as scared of people at the dance as I was in real life. And I kind of spent the whole time walking back and forth between the food and just like one side of the gym, pretending I had a purpose for going there. And I found the one kid that I kind of knew a little bit, this guy, Brian. And so I followed him around at a distance of like 6 feet. And at one point, he turned around and he said, "Why are you following me around like you miss my ass?"
Here's Adam sharing what happened when his big homecoming plans went bust.
I'm Adam. In elementary school and all into high school, I was the definition of dorky. I was in the math league and the science Olympiad. I was temporary vice president of the chess club in eighth grade. Temporary. It's a common myth that nerds are happy to be nerds because a lot of us hated it. It was an insult. And by high school, I wanted nothing more than normalcy. I wanted to fit in. And I tried everything I could think of, but it just wasn't working. And then the summer before 10th grade, I went away to a magical place called Nerd Camp. And it wasn't actually called Nerd Camp. That would have been really cruel, but that's basically what it was. You live on a college campus for 3 weeks, you take a class, and all the other kids at camp are the kind of kids who want to live on a college campus for 3 weeks in the summer and take a class. And it was great. I made lots of friends at Nerd Camp. I was in the middle of a social scene I'd never had before. And so I said to myself, okay, I know this is going to be over in 3 weeks. I promise myself that when I get back to high school, I will be different. I will have friends just like I do at Nerd Camp. And I even set a goal. I said, okay, big stake in the ground. I will know I have succeeded because I will have a date for 10th grade homecoming. I did not end up getting a date for homecoming. So on homecoming night, instead of going to the dance, I went out to dinner with my parents to a Howard Johnson's, which only made it more depressing. I was the youngest one there. I think my parents were the second and third youngest. And when I got home, it was like 8:30. It was so early. And I knew everybody was across town at the dance in the cafeteria. And I had nothing to do. And so I went in the basement and I turned on our old computer. And this was 1994. It was a 286. So it really was an old computer at that point. And I just started typing. I typed for like the next 2.5 hours. And I called what I wrote ESAR, The Esoteric Secrets of Adam Rubin. And tonight, 1 week shy of being the 20th anniversary of the writing of this document, I am both pleased and mortified to be able to read parts of it to you. It's the night of the big homecoming dance, and I'm sitting at home. I sort of broke a vow to myself, one I made this summer. I vowed that I, Adam Rubin, will have a date for homecoming. Guess what? I don't. I did ask someone. I've never asked anyone before for fear of inevitable rejection. And she said no. Am I antisocial? Do I fear human contact? Or, and this is a particularly troubling thought, am I paranoid? This summer at camp, I had never up until that point known the simple joy of having people actually look forward to my presence. It was then that I viewed in a critical light my standards, prejudices, and social interactions. Basically, was I antisocial? I concluded that I was. At lunch, would I sit with peers or by myself? The answer, of course, was by myself. So I said to myself, sit with other people, make friends. These people want to be your friends and you're not giving them a chance. People actually do like you. Give them a chance and maybe they'll give you one. Well, this year started out like last year, but with a different mental attitude, which in time degenerated back almost to the standards of last year. I am a rock. I am Eleanor Rigby, listening inwardly as the sounds of silence come to talk with me again. I am Nowhere Man, sitting in my nowhere land, making all my nowhere plans for nobody. Chemistry class, we're choosing stations, and I choose half a table, the other half of which has already been selected by a peer. She says, you're not going to be my lab partner, are you? I apologize briefly for even suggesting such an absurdity, and traverse the room to another lab station, one by myself. Band class, same day, she approaches me amidst the loud squeaks of tuning up, and apologizes for chem class. She says she didn't mean it the way it sounded. Oh, did she mean to say, I hope I'm not causing you any displeasure by asking you to kindly go somewhere I'm not? So I, eager for what? Compassion, friendship, or pity? Let's say a chance to forgive. Forgave her by saying something along the lines of, it's okay, I understand. Hoping she would catch the hidden meaning that I should not have to understand. Instead, she said something that got disguised by a descending jazz scale on a tenor sax and walked back to her seat. I would like to say that I let it pass, but I didn't. It is the burnt noodle that comes up when I stir my thought soup. French class, about a week or two later, right before a gigantic test on irregular verbs, the teacher gives us 10 seconds to cram, and then there's a fire drill. We evacuate to the student parking lot. A crowd of three people had formed around the same peer in the aforementioned paragraph. It's not really what aforementioned means. Because she brought her notes with her. I joined the group because I needed desperately to study. I was greeted with a friendly, can you go to the other side of the parking lot or something? I said no a little too playfully, and of course the peer thought I was just trying to be annoying. No apology came this time. In fifth grade, I cried when hit in the face with a textbook. In sixth, I fell down trying to kick a kickball. No one remembers the 10 times I did kick that ball, only the one time I didn't. Some advice I once received was use each year as a new beginning. I've gone through 9 new years and 4 attempted new atoms, and I'm right back where I started. It's 9:45. The dance has been going on for nearly an hour. People are having the time of their lives with their dates, which I promised myself I'd have, and I don't. Each day, I would wake up with a feeling of inspiration in my bosom. A word which the reader of this writing will pick out as the one thing to be remembered. Not the deep questions, not the plea for help, but ha-ha, he used bosom in a serious context. Yes. 20 years ago, I thought about tonight. And I would say to myself, Adam, today is the day. Today you're going to ask someone to homecoming. Each night I yell at myself in the mirror for not having accomplished the day's goal. Then I yell at myself some more for worrying over such frivolous things when there are people in the world without food. This is almost 4 full pages long, the result of diarrhea of the brain. When thoughts get bottled up, they release in a carbonated waterfall. Like opening a bottle of champagne or bourbon. Or potassium cyanide. I've been reading a lot of Agatha Christie. Am I suicidal? No. But someone else in my position may be. And the reader, who will read this? Anybody? Do I want anybody to read it? Do I even want myself to read it 10 years from now? 20 years, but... And if I do decide to show it to someone, would it be because I seek pity? A recent talk show my sister watched featured 40-year-old men who've never had a date. Will I be one of them in the future? The way things are going, anything's possible. Most of all, it hurts late at night when I mentally harass myself for being so terrible or so unresponsive or undefined or whatever the elusive reason may be that I have become the modern American equivalent of an Indian untouchable. So about a month and a half after I wrote this, I was on a marching band road trip. And someone next to me said something like, oh, I'm going to go to this party. And I just couldn't take it anymore. And I just lost it. And I started telling all the kids in the seats around me how I felt. And it turned out these were nice people. These were students I'd gone to class with, in some cases, since first grade. And they told me that I should eat lunch with them in the cafeteria on Monday. And I still remember very vividly on Monday, I'm in the cafeteria. I've got my tray. And I see where they're sitting. And I can't do it. I cannot make myself sit with them because I knew that if even one of them gave me a look that said, what's he doing here, that'd be too much for me to take. And so I ate alone on Monday, and I ate alone on Tuesday. But on Wednesday, I gathered all my courage, and I went and sat with them, and I ate lunch. And it was normal. And for the first time at high school, I felt normal. Don't get me wrong, I didn't become homecoming king or anything. But I finally understood and believed that this loneliness was finite and that nice people existed in the world. When I wrote the ESAR, The Esoteric Secrets of Adam Rubin, I had no idea that I was only months away from eating lunch with people who would become my friends. I didn't know that I was just a few years away from going to college, which was, holy crap, a 4-year nerd camp. Go, engineering department! And then 7 years of grad school, where you're kind of the ones who run the nerd camp. And I'm pleased to report that today I'm not going to be a 40-year-old virgin because I have 2 kids. So if I am a virgin, my wife has a lot of explaining to do. But sitting in my basement 20 years ago on homecoming night, I only knew that something had to change. So I ended the ESAR, The Esoteric Secrets of Adam Rubin, my manifesto of self-pity, with this paragraph. Let's not forget the optimist's point of view in this matter. How to change the situation? How can I become the type of person that, even if not well-liked, is at least shown a little more respect than a pile of excrement? Most people aspire to be great. I aspire to be most people. The answer is, naturally, beyond my grasp. Maybe that's the reason I would show this to someone, so they can help me. I do want help. I do want to change, but I cannot do it by myself. I need help. Reader, whoever you may be, please help me.
That was Adam Rubin, reading aloud his childhood writings with no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness, in Baltimore at Gallery 788. And now there's more to the story in our postmortem, Vide. We caught up with Adam and wanted to know exactly how many girls did he ask to homecoming before he decided it was a lost cause.
So the grand total number of girls that I asked to homecoming from my high school that year was zero. There was one girl that I had thought a lot about asking, not because I liked her, but because I thought nobody liked her. She wasn't mean or anything. She was just very, very, very quiet and very new to the school. And I thought, if I ask her, she's less likely to say no because I don't think anyone else is asking her. And then in the end, I didn't even have the courage to ask her.
So does he still wish he'd gone to homecoming?
It would have been a great night, no matter how it went, just because I would have been someone who could do this date thing that everybody around me seemed to be able to do. I don't think there would have been any downside, even if my date and I didn't even talk to each other the whole night.
Luckily, Adam didn't let his homecoming nightmare stop him from chasing his school dance dreams.
About 3 months after this homecoming dance, there was a girl in my high school who liked me, and so we started dating, and she was my first date, my first dance with a date anyway. So I went back to a high school dance in January with her as my date. And she had been my girlfriend then for like 9 days.
And in the very same cafeteria where the homecoming dance was held, Adam got to experience another milestone.
We were sitting on the sidelines in some chairs by the water fountain. And forgive me, but I know this, it was 10:39 p.m. on January 20th, 1995. And the song that just finished playing was It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine by R.E.M. And I thought, well, that's my signal. It's the end of the world as we know it. And so that's when I had my first kiss.
Of course, dances aren't just about making love connections. There is the matter of actually dancing. Before we said goodbye to Adam, I had to know, did he ever figure out how to get his groove on?
I still am terrible. I can't physically move in the way that I think human beings do. I had someone, a friend of mine, just made fun of me a couple years ago because of the way I clap my hands. Like, he had to instruct me how to hold my elbows when I clap my hands because apparently I do it in a very unnatural way.
To share the shame, follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit getmortified.com to learn about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and who knows, maybe you'll appear on a future episode of this series. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Katie McMurrin, Pooja Bhatt, Dave Nailberg, and myself, Neil Catcher. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snake Snake Snakes. Additional thanks to Lance Roberts Studios, Ann Jensen Smith, Madeline Kenyon, Gallery 788, and all the dedicated Mortified live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survived.